That was a great video, wasn't it? Which one do you feel like? One that ends up lying on the ground? Or the one that has somebody going with him? Jesus calls us to go out into the world and make disciples. And if you remember the lettering, the words that were on that video, it said that thousands of soldiers or disciples die every year because they don't receive the one-on-one training. Jesus ended his ministry on earth with these words: "Go, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you, and surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." Jesus set the example for what we are supposed to do here on earth. He gave a command: go and make disciples, told them how to do it, teach them to obey everything I've commanded them to do, commanded you to do. And as he did that, confidently, because throughout his whole life, he had taught and modeled and walked beside his disciples. The verse that Kurt read for us right at the beginning of our meditation was found in Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 to 30. "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." Well, looking at that video, it didn't look like rest. If you look at your life, does your life look like rest? For most of us, it just plain doesn't. "Take my yoke upon you." And that sounds almost like an oxymoron. Come to me for rest and I'll put you to work. Something doesn't jibe right with us with that. "And learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." And then he says, "For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." As I looked at this verse, and the Lord put it on my heart to speak on this verse this morning, I thought I just really need to look at what the context of this verse is. This is a verse that has brought comfort, solace, direction to people through centuries, ever since it was spoken and written. It's been a verse that just jumps out from its context and impacts our lives. It's so many times in our lives, we hear those words, "Come to me and rest." And we need that so much. We're so tired. We're so burdened. And we just want rest. Kind of like at the end of the school year and the beginning of summer, time when your vacation's coming. I just want to rest. And we think that resting is an absence of activity. That when Jesus said that we should keep a Sabbath every week, that means that we sit one day with our hands folded and do absolutely nothing. For many people, that would be worse than taking a nap. That would be worse than working all day. Because Jesus is saying here that when you come to me and into my rest, doesn't mean that you stop being and stop doing. Doesn't mean that everything just hits a flat line and that's the end of everything. And you'll just be comfortable as you walk along with me. And so I really want to look at the verse in its context here to understand why Matthew put this in here. This verse is only found in the book of Matthew. It's not in any of the other Gospels. And to understand why Matthew would put that in here, the other disciples, so the other gospel writers, heard Jesus speak these words, but they didn't include those. Why does Matthew include this here? And I want to look at this kind of like when you take a picture. And when you take a picture, the lens focuses on that one thing that you want, and you've got one of those automatic focus things nowadays. And it just focuses on that, and all of the rest just kind of sits around in a blur in the picture, right? Because it's not really important in the picture. And that's kind of what we do often with this verse in Matthew. But the truth of the matter is this verse is really, the context is really important to understand the verse. And so let me just give you a little background here on this verse. A couple of chapters before this kind of set the stage for why and how, when Jesus is saying and speaking these words. In chapter 10, it describes a time in Jesus' ministry when people really liked him. They wanted to be around him. They thought he was a wonderful guy. He was doing miracles. He was doing all kinds of great things. And he had a lot of people that showed up everywhere he was. In that group, there were people that just went for the show. Not that Jesus was there to put on a show, and Jesus really didn't care about having a bunch of fans. He was looking for followers. He was calling out for followers. But there was a time in his ministry when his ministry just grew and expanded, and he was doing miracles, and people were hearing about this all over Palestine. And they would come to see him. They would come to hear him. They would show up because he was there. They would go and wait for him to show up in different places along the road. And we know that this was a lot of people because it talks about him feeding 4,000, talks about him feeding 5,000. So we know these groups were substantial that followed him. But in that great group of people, there were people who were simply just fans. They never really bought into the message that Jesus was giving. They wanted to be there to be able to say, yeah, when he healed that blind man, I was there. I saw it happen. It didn't cost me anything. Didn't even need to buy a ticket. I just was there. There were people that wanted to get in on the fringe benefits of what Jesus was doing, but they didn't really commit to the message or to joining him. Kind of just stayed out there. But among all of those people, there were also really true followers, people that believed Jesus, people that wanted to be with him. Because just being with him, listening to him, they learned so much about how to live the life that they were put into. And then things started to get a little tough in Jesus' ministry. John the Baptist got put in jail. The disciples started to see that the religious leaders were getting very uneasy with what was happening. And the followers started to follow at a little further distance than they'd been following before. And there's one passage in Matthew that tells us that many left Jesus because his words were too hard. What Jesus was asking from them was too difficult. So we have those fans that really never make a commitment. We have followers who make a commitment, but when things get going tough, they kind of fade away. We've got problems here, I'm out of here. But there was still the faithful followers, and we know that they were many. There were many disciples. The Bible talks about Jesus sending out 70 disciples to heal, to preach the gospel. And then in chapter 10 of Matthew, talks about Jesus choosing 12 of them. And he chooses these 12 not because they were special people. We've read the scriptures. We know they were men that made some pretty big mistakes and even left them at the end. But these 12 were chosen so that Jesus would walk with them through a period of time, modeling for them what he expected them to do for others. He was discipling them so that they in turn would disciple others. Go, preach the gospel, make disciples, he said. But he didn't just leave them hanging out there. He showed them how to do it. By what he did, by how he handled situations, by how he dealt with them, and by the word that he spoke. Now, the setting for this verse is not a comfortable setting. Jesus has chosen 12 people, and he's given them a great responsibility. He says to them, go, preach this message. The kingdom of heaven is near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. But before they go out to do that, he gives them a word of caution. He says, now, the situation isn't a great situation. Be on your guard against men. They will hand you over to the local councils and flog you in their synagogues. On my account, you will be brought before governors and kings as witnesses to them and to the Gentiles. And then a little later on in the same discourse, he says, so don't be afraid of them. And he repeats, don't be afraid of them. So obviously he was sending them into a situation that was dangerous in one way or another. He wasn't sending them to an easy time. And we know that it wasn't easy for the disciples, because the scriptures record that some of the cities that they went to, at least the 70 that they went to, when they went out, did not receive them and didn't receive the message. They just rejected them, rejected Jesus. And then John the Baptist in jail, even he has his doubts because of the things that are going on. And he sends his disciples to Jesus to ask him, are you really the one? And that's in this context here of this verse. After Jesus sends out the 12, then we see John the Baptist doubting. So there's suffering. There's doubt. Jesus says to the disciples of John the Baptist, go back to him and tell him what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is preached to the poor. Blessed is the man who does not fall away on account of me. So he's sending them out to do the battle of discipleship. And it's a tough place to be. And we know that. Danger, suffering, doubts that come along. And not just that. Jesus describes to them the culture in which he expects his message to be spoken, the culture in which he expects them to go out and make disciples. He says in the same chapter as these verses are in, he says, to what can I compare this generation? Listen carefully. I think you'll hear some parallels to our generation today. We played the flute for you, and you did not dance. We sang a dirge, and you did not mourn. A little parable that he throws in. They were so unsatisfied. It was an unsatisfied generation, and a restless generation. And it was a lot easier to whine and complain than to play the game. We played the flute for you, and you didn't dance. We sang a dirge, and you didn't mourn. Didn't matter what we did. Doesn't matter what we do. You're not going to receive us. That's kind of an unhappy situation to be sent out into, isn't it? But when we look at our culture today, it's a culture where Christianity is often attacked. There's opposition to the message of Christ. Many of us reach points in our life from just being burdened and weary and whatever, where we have doubts. Am I really doing the right thing here? Or is this just something that man made up so that he would have some purpose in life? Or is this really true? And in this generation, I mean, really, how are we ever going to reach this generation? Can you imagine the disciples back there thinking that? How am I going to reach this generation for Christ? If they're like this? Well, things haven't changed that much. The principles that Jesus set forth, he set forth in the context of things that we experience every day today. They transcend time and history. And as we read what Jesus says to his disciples and how he deals with his disciples, we take that message to our hearts today, because it's like there is no space between when he spoke them then and when he speaks them today from his living word. And on top of that, Jesus reminds them that they went to all these cities and they weren't received well. And then with all of this stuff going on, it's really quite a tumultuous background. Jesus speaks these words, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. They were weary, all right. They were battle weary. They had faced so many things. They had so many exposures to suffering. They had witnessed so much. They knew about John the Baptist in jail, wondered if they'd be next. They were burdened. They were burdened with the expectations that they'd placed on themselves, perhaps the expectations that others had placed on them, perhaps the expectations that even their title had placed on them. Can you imagine being one of the 12 that followed Jesus closely, what the expectations would be on that? I can't even be human. I have to be super God or something here. Jesus says, come to me, you that are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. And the call here that he gives is an open invitation. It wasn't just to the 12. It wasn't just to the 70. And it wasn't just to those that were following closely, but it was to the fans to come and join, to become committed disciples of Jesus. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. If we take the yoke upon us of discipleship and don't learn from Jesus, we will feel like that young man that went out with no protection, right? He was all alone out there, and the enemy got him. He didn't survive. Jesus said, that's not what I'm doing, and that's not what I expect you to do with disciples. Learn of me. Teach them to obey all the things that I have taught. For I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. You'll find my yoke is easy and my burden is light. The yoke is easy because he's walking beside us and sharing that yoke. We've heard this so many times. Are we living it? And the burden is light, because he measures what he asks us to do according to who he has made us to be, what gifts he has given us, where he has placed us. He knows how old we are, how young we are. He knows what our energy level is. He knows the circumstances of our life. And the burden that he puts on us is light because he understands all that. Many times we walk heavy burden because we've taken on things that aren't ours to take on, that God hasn't given us to take on. Or maybe we're burdened because we know God's asked us to do something and we haven't done it. And then when we get back on track and start doing that, we find, wow, I'm sleeping better at night. I just feel more restful. I'm enjoying more what I'm experiencing each day, and I'm just enjoying the presence of God. That's the background for that verse. But what comes after that verse is what Kurt read about the mercy. The disciples going through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and they picked some heads of grain, and right away the Pharisees jumped on them. Well, they jumped on Jesus. And they said, look, your disciples are doing something that's unlawful on the Sabbath. Jesus illustrates to them what it means to take up the yoke and find the burden light. Because the disciples don't even have to respond here. Jesus responds to the Pharisees. And he says, haven't you read in the law what it says there? If you'd known what these words mean. And he reprimands the Pharisees. He defends the disciples. He defends them because they have acknowledged him before man, and he will now acknowledge them before the Father. As he says in verse 32 of chapter 10, whoever acknowledges me before men, I will also acknowledge him before my Father in heaven. Wonderful, isn't that? There's rest in that. He is my defense. When I take up that yoke and walk with him and learn from him, I learn that he will always be my defender. I don't even have to speak many times, just like the disciples didn't. And there's one more thing in this story of the Sabbath that perhaps doesn't have a lot to do with the Sabbath as far as developing that as a theme in here. But it says that Jesus, going on from that place, went into another synagogue. And a man there was there with a shriveled hand. Looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, they asked, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? And he said to them, if any of you has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a man than a sheep? Jesus says, take my yoke on you. Learn from me. I place high value on you. As I place high value on you, then my expectation is that you place high value on those that become my disciples. And Jesus says back in, when he was sending out those ones into such danger and such a difficult situation, he says there, are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from the will of your Father. And even the very hairs of your head are numbered. So don't be afraid. You're worth more than many sparrows. And Jesus says, in that context, the context of persecution, but also the context of what he's going to do, who he is, he says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart. I'll be with you. I'll defend you. You have high value to me. You will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And my question for us all today, are we fans or followers? The followers of Jesus were trained by Jesus to do what Jesus did for others, to not leave those that came over to our side, alone. A fan is one who quits when the going gets tough. A follower is one who works through the hard times, works through the difficulties, sticks with it. A fan goes to church to get the benefit of whatever. But a follower does the work of the church. He goes to give, not to receive. A fan walks around most of the time with a dry spirit, except for those moments when Jesus shows up. A follower has passion. A follower obeys, responds to the invitation to come. See, it's not Jesus that needs to show up. It's us that need to show up in his presence. A fan makes excuses: too busy, too tired, too old. A follower puts Jesus first, listens to him, does what he asks, because his yoke is easy, independent of what his circumstances are. A fan is just an enthusiastic admirer. But a follower has the opportunity to fall in love with Jesus, to walk side by side with him, to go into the world and make disciples. And he leaves us with the promise, "I'm with you always." So my question for each of us today is, are we fans or are we followers?